Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How did racism affect the life of one of UT's first black music majors? And how did that student's courage inspire generations of those who would follow? When mezzo-soprano Barbara Smith Conrad left her home in tiny Center Point, Texas in 1956, she had big dreams of studying opera at the University of Texas, which was admitting the first African-American undergraduates in its history. Despite the reluctance of some white students to integrate with their black classmates, Smith's talents earned her instant respect among her peers in the music department, and she was chosen to sing the lead in UT's production of Dido and Aeneas with a white co-star. It was a dream come true for a young performer, and she rehearsed for months until 2 weeks before the show when UT's president ordered her removed from the production, fearing loss of university funding from anti-integration state lawmakers appalled at the idea of an interracial couple. Smith went on to graduate from UT, performed leading roles with opera companies in the U.S., Canada, Europe, and Latin America, and spent 8 years with the Metropolitan Opera. But the sting of that early rejection lasted for decades, until both the university and the state legislature publicly acknowledged the wrongdoing of the past and tried to make amends. Barbara Smith Conrad's story, portrayed in the documentary When I Rise, debuted last year at South by Southwest. It will air tomorrow night at 10 on KERA 13 television as part of the Independent Lens series. Barbara, welcome to Think.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you very much.
Let's start by going back to your childhood. Can you tell us about growing up in Center Point?
Yeah, well, I had a dual life. My parents were both teachers at the beginning of their marriage. Conrad and Jerry Smith, and he became principal of a little school in East Texas, Atlanta, Texas, Cass County, and that's where I started, where we all started. Centerpoint was the community where the first accredited school was in full regalia, but my parents, you know, taught away from there. But home base was Center Point.
And this was a place where everywhere you went, music was there. It was at school, it was at church, and it was certainly at home.
It certainly was. Blessed and with a tremendously gifted family. My sister, the beautiful voice. My mother, the beautiful voice. My father did not have a beautiful voice. He sort of, you know, did the hillbilly thing for us just to annoy us.
Well, lucky him then to be surrounded by all that great music.
Yes, exactly. The wunderkind of the family was Denard, a pianist who could play anything from age, what, 6, 7 in there. So the community was that, a very forward-thinking community. I, being the youngest of a family of five, never attended the school there because my mother taught away from there. We always just came back there.
And she would take you to concerts when she could. Can you talk about the first time that you saw Marian Anderson perform?
Oh, that was just something unbelievable. By then I was in junior high school, and that was in Texarkana, Texas. And it was just like watching something that you dreamed of and you never expected to really be in the presence of this extraordinary woman. I can't honestly say that moment I knew that I was going to do that. I think I was born knowing that I was going to do that, because I lived some very tough years there. Mm-hmm. So I lived with a great aunt in West Texas with her husband, and can't remember not singing. You know, every weekend they would do barbecues and things, and then I would have to sing for all those people and enjoyed every minute of it.
And at that point, you were often singing not opera music, but spirituals.
Oh, no, you're not going to get anywhere near opera at that age. Something is wrong with your teacher otherwise. Just because the family was all musical. Mm-hmm. That community of Center Point was full of wonderful, gifted people. But it was not until first I went to Prairie View A&M College, my first 2 years, And when the school, when the University of Texas integrated, is when I transferred to University of Texas, Austin.
Barbara, were you worried about being one of the first black undergrads at UT?
I'm sure I had to have had some concern, but I say it that way because I was so busy trying to learn so many things.
Mm-hmm.
The curriculum itself, I mean, studying counterpoint. I didn't know anything about counterpoint, but I had wonderful, wonderful teachers. I love the music school there, I must say. Tremendous. Dean Doty was dean of the College of Fine Arts, and that was a very special time.
And I think the story is really charming of you auditioning for Dido and Aeneas, and when you found out that you got the part, you walked into a room and at first thought that everyone was jeering at you.
Yes, that's a true story. Well, because you didn't know quite what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
It was the beginning of the semester, and I didn't know how I was going to be received, not really. But it became clear very shortly afterwards that, for the most part, the music students and faculty are pretty wonderful people, in my book.
It was just about the music at that point. It wasn't about what color your skin was.
No, not at all.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, nobody paid much attention to it.
On the other hand, you were not allowed to live in the dorms at UT, and you could not eat at any of the on-campus cafeterias.
The only one we could go was, yes, that's pretty much the story.
Did that make it hard to make friends outside the music department?
You know, not in my case, no.
Because that doesn't surprise me about you,
pretty
I guess.
Who I hung out with all the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, there were others. There was other. You know, there were language classes, the Italian, the French, etc. You know, but most of my time was with music students in one capacity or another.
So, did it occur to you that anybody off the UT campus was even aware that there was an African American woman and a white man singing in Dido and Aeneas when you began rehearsals?
I think people who were connected, you know, with we were right in the middle, in the mouth of the Capitol.
Uh-huh.
So anything that was going on over there, you would make certain that they were going to know. And Chaplin from my neck of the woods of northeast Texas was the one who really stirred up all of that.
Controversy, hatred.
Controversy, yes.
Yeah. Well, let's listen. This was your state representative, Joe Chapman, and we have a sound clip from him in 1957 speaking about just this issue.
The university students called to the attention of several members of the legislature, including myself, the fact that the music department of the university had auditioned and was casting an opera. A Negro girl attending the university, as I understand it, for the first time, was being considered for the leading role. The girl involved in this matter is a perfect example of the excellent schools that Texas provides for Negroes. And the fact that she does have a good voice and has been trained for 2 years in a Texas Negro school proves this excellent training. I do not feel that out of a student body of 17,000, a minority of 50 should be imposed upon the majority and force them to assume a role that is not traditionally socially acceptable to the people of Texas.
Oh, my God.
What do you think when you hear that?
Oh, I don't remember the end of that speech.
Yeah.
Oof. It just makes my blood boil.
Yeah, mine too.
That's what I think. What an ignorant person we had. How unfortunate Northeast Texas was to have had him. Oh, I don't know.
The thought that you were used as a defense of segregated schools is just hard to imagine.
Oh, please. It is just that whole thing was when I first saw the first run of the film and I saw that, I had forgotten a lot of it. You know, you push that stuff aside.
Yeah.
But just to hear that little bit tat at the end there, I don't remember that. But I do now.
Well, I'm sorry to have put that back
into your mind. No. It's okay. It's good for me to get good and mad once in a while.
At the time, were you good and mad? Were you just hurt? What was the balance between anger and fear for you?
I don't remember being afraid. I'm sure I should have been. My father said, girl, it's time for you to do something like look around and see who's following you.
Yeah.
I had wonderful support. I had community support from the black community. I had tremendous support from students and almost all of the faculty that I encountered, especially the music school. It was a mixed blessing. Some of it was easygoing and some of it was not. Some of it was as a man... I went back a couple of years ago, and there were for the 50th anniversary of my class, and I just remembered how deeply moved I was by so many of the men who were in my class, tears just streaming, and one man in particular stands out, and he said, I just didn't know what to do. Hmm. And that really, I understood. Because sometimes you don't know what to do. You know, you've put yourself in harm's way. Do you do that? Do you stand up? It's not an easy choice to make.
Barbara Smith Conrad is my guest. She is a native Texan and mezzo-soprano and subject of the documentary film When I Rise. It debuted last year at South by Southwest and will air tomorrow night at 10 on KERA 13 television. We'll resume our conversation with Barbara in a moment. You can join it by calling 1-800-933-5372. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Chris. What an incredible conversation. What an incredible individual. And again,
such a good film.
We're so thrilled to be able to bring you these kinds of conversations on the show every day. Every single day, we do absolutely everything we can to make sure that we're going to have a guest or a topic that interests you. And I'm here because I'm at work today and I work on the show, but I'm just riveted. I didn't want to come in here to do the membership break because I want to hear more from our guest today.
I'll tell you, I watched the film with my kids, and usually if I tell them I have to watch a documentary for work, come sit with me, they're like, oh, Mom. And like 2 minutes in, they were riveted. It's a fascinating story. Of course, Barbara is such a warm and really
incredible,
enchanting person to talk to, but such a good story, and we'll hear more of it as we come along. Your contribution to the station at 1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org allows us to bring you this kind of programming. We are so glad to do it, so happy for your interest. But your support is really the foundation of public radio in this community. Thanks so much to Robert Howell in Dallas, Benjamin Tapshoes Guthrie in Dallas. Jackie says, say hi to your dad. Thanks to Christine Karpelis and all of you who perhaps are on the line right now making your contributions.
888-694-6931. Online at kera.org. We heard from William and Diane Woodward in Argyle. June Lloyd in Dallas. Thanks, June. And thank you also to Tom Ruprecht and Chris Adane in Dallas. Thank you so much for your contributions at 888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. If you want those, the Ken Burns Super Pack of the three documentaries, The Civil War, National Parks, and Baseball, it's yours when you join the station today with a $275 membership level. You don't just get one of those. You get all three of those series in their entirety.
That's so 22 DVDs.
It is. So don't wait. Call 888-694-6931. I can't wait to hear more of your conversation with Barbara Smith Conrad, Chris.
Again, make your contribution now at kera.org or 1-888-694-6931. Pay with a credit or a debit card or set up a sustaining membership. However you want to do it, we really appreciate your contribution. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Barbara Smith Conrad.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is mezzo-soprano and native Texan Barbara Smith Conrad. She's the subject of the documentary film When I Rise, which airs tomorrow night at 10 on KERA Channel 13 television as part of the Independent Lens series. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So, Barbara, the decision that you would be removed from the opera was made not by Dean Doty of the music department, but by UT President Logan Wilson. How significant was the pressure on Wilson? How realistically worried should he have been about losing university funding because of your place in the opera?
I'm not sure that that's a question I really will ever be able to answer accurately, but I would imagine must have been pretty stiff.
Yeah.
pressure, because it turned overnight.
Yeah, because you'd been going along, and nobody was really saying anything, and then boom.
Well, not out loud, and not really, no.
And it must have been a blow to you that the news was delivered by Dean Doty, who you really liked and trusted as a mentor.
Well, blow is a good word. I was pretty stunned. I had a very good rapport with Dean Doty. In fact, I really respected him a great deal. So when he told me that he had this honors message to pass on me, I was stunned by it.
Did you feel betrayed?
Oh, yes. You can't help but.
Yeah.
First of all, that's a vulnerable age when you're ready to show the world how great you are. You know. But basically what he said was he apologized and apologized and apologized and made it clear that this was not his decision, which I wouldn't have thought anyway, but he was a lot. He had been instructed to tell my that I should tell my parents and no one else, which is of course ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a really hazy time in my life.
Yeah.
But I also, you know, it's like everything else. You, in the midst of it, you discover amazing people, wonderful people, supportive people. And one of my dearest friends, who was there the other night in Austin, she was there with her mother, who stood by me, 99 years old, was there in the auditorium. So I had this amazing group of people who stood by me then and still do.
So this made national headlines, and there were lots of really hateful and frightening things that were written to you and about you. But you also attracted the attention of some important people, including Harry Belafonte. Can you talk about how that happened?
Oh, with great, great pleasure. I'll talk about him. My house mother and I were on our way to Northeast Texas for me to get a rest, for me to be with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And he called to offer support to go to any school of my choice anywhere in the world. That was pretty wonderful. That was pretty heady stuff. And so I took that message with me to home, which is about 350 miles away,
mm-hmm.
and talked to my parents about it. And my father was he didn't make a big deal of it. He just said, if you want to go, go. If you don't, stay.
Why did you stay?
Why did I stay?
Yeah.
Well, because the one way to get me to do something is to tell me I can't.
They should have known who they were dealing with.
They should have. This Leo girl. But at first, Belafonte was pretty, he was surprised that that was my response.
Yeah.
But he later on said that it was exactly what I should have done, and I should be proud of it. So, and I am. First of all, there was no way I was going to be able to establish anything resembling a relationship with this university or with the city of Austin or with the state of Texas, for that matter. Because the one thing you had as a musician, especially one whose eye was on places like the Metropolitan Opera, mm-hmm. is that you could leave here and you really didn't have to come back if you didn't want to, because there were so many other options at that point. Things were changing. But I'm glad I did and went on to, you know, meet wonderful people like Eleanor Roosevelt, who sent me my car fare, my fare to go to New York. Just all kinds of wonderful moments like that began to unfold.
And, of course, you had a lot of wonderful contacts through Harry Belafonte. I have to say, by the way, in the film, there's this old footage of him, and he's handsome today, but it's just extraordinary. He's just absolutely so charismatic.
Yes, he is, and he still is. It's just amazing. He was amazing, and he stuck by you, mm-hmm. you know. He didn't just say, here, girl, here's some scholarship money, and he started a foundation, Barbara Smith Foundation, at the very beginning. I don't know when that changed, but he stood by me, and his whole staff stood by me.
Now, that did not keep you from being very hungry your first days in New York.
No. I never told anybody how hungry I was, but that's okay, because if I told my mother, she would have insisted that I come back home.
And you love New York.
Oh, I love New York, absolutely. It was the right place for me to be. Mm-hmm. And it's the right place for almost anyone who, or someplace like it, where you can express these broad sweeps in music. It's just not going to happen in Centerpoint or Pittsburgh, Texas, or Atlanta, Texas, or Texarkana, Texas. It's not possible. There's nothing there to support it.
When you got to New York, was race even an issue as you were going around and meeting with composers and different people?
Composers were never a problem. That's a very good question. I met great composers like Menotti and all of those, that whole era. But finding a place to live was. We ran into a lot of racism when it came to looking for a place to live.
Even though you were college educated and...
And all of those things.
Yeah.
It didn't make any difference.
So you went along, your career absolutely begins to take off, and you're singing all over the world, and you're, very well known. And then the opportunity comes for you to actually play Marian Anderson in a film about Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt. Can you talk about that experience?
Yeah, it was Eleanor and Franklin, the White House years. Mm-hmm. And it was I had just finished singing Carmen at City Opera in New York, and the director of that had been asked about someone to play the part of Marian Anderson, and he thought of me. I went to meet Miss Anderson and sang for her, be sure that I was a person that she wanted to have, person to represent her in this film. And it was a thrilling thing. Hmm. It was some very unexpected moments in the process of getting made up. And, sort of morphing into Marian Anderson.
Yeah.
But the thing that has stayed with me all these years is we were on location, and I was asked to walk down the steps. We had recorded the anthem before going to D.C., and I walked down the steps, and I thought, I was looking for motivation.
Mm-hmm. This is at the Lincoln Memorial.
This is the Lincoln Memorial. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, all the University of Texas stuff just flew back in. Hmm. Saved by a man who ran up to me at the bottom of the steps and and said, "Oh, Miss Anderson, you haven't changed a bit." I'll never forget it as long as I live. But that was a very exciting time, and a lot of things like that happened during those years, opportunities to do all kinds of wonderful things.
And the reason that you went back to your University of Texas days looking for motivation in playing Marian Anderson was that she had been kept from performing in an opera house, and Eleanor Roosevelt said, "Fine, then you will perform at the Lincoln Memorial."
It was Daughters of the American Revolution were not allowing her to sing there.
Did it surprise you how upset you still were by what had happened at UT?
It was just a passing moment.
Uh-huh.
It was not anything, you know, prolonged by any means. But it did. I had unfinished business with UT, in my own heart and soul and spirit. And that changed in 1985.
But you have set us up perfectly for a break here, and I can see what a pro you are. We'll pause for a moment in our conversation with Barbara Smith Conrad. She is a mezzo-soprano and native Texan, subject of the documentary film When I Rise. It debuted at South by Southwest last year. It will air tomorrow night as part of the Independent Lens series on PBS on KERA 13 television. The show airs at 10 o'clock at night. If you'd like to join our conversation with Barbara Smith Conrad, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Welcome once again, Jeff Whittington.
Thank you, Chris Boyd. And thank you to Charon Bamidi in Arlington, Liz and Sean Tobias in Flower Mound, Sylvia Duncan in Mansfield. They have called 888-694-6931, or maybe they've contributed their support to KERA online at kera.org. And the exciting news is that we've knocked almost $3,000 off what was left to raise when we started the show today at noon, Chris. So thanks to each of you who has contributed at whatever level is right for you. Just
$207,729
left to go.
So maybe you can be the 729 or maybe 229 or maybe the 29.
Yeah.
Your contribution will help us get closer to finishing the drive and just continuing with all the programming that you love on KERA. You can go online to kera.org or call 1-888-694-6931.
This is your public radio station. Who else is going to spend an hour of time with Barbara Smith Conrad? Everyone should.
Everybody wants to.
I would personally like to spend an hour
so
with her.
So amazing.
She is, she's just an amazing individual. And we haven't even gotten to the later years of her career, and she's went on to do some incredible stuff, and I can't wait to hear the next segment. And I know that you can't wait to hear it either. And, you know, that is really the danger zone. For me, as a planning producer for this kind of programming, when we get into the membership campaign, it's really dangerous to have a guest that is this interesting, this captivating, this riveting on the show, because I don't think you want to risk not hearing any of the show and call the pledge number or go online to KERA.org and make a contribution.
And that is why, for the next couple of minutes, it is just Jeff and me.
That's right.
You're not missing any riveting content. You're just missing us talking to you. We are talking about important things, but you can go online now to KERA.org or even pick up the phone at 1-888-694-6931. Be completely finished supporting KERA at whatever level you like before we get back with Barbara Smith Conrad in a couple of minutes.
Yeah, we're talking about one important thing, and that's you. Don't you think that you're important? I would say that you listen to public radio, you live in North Texas, or maybe outside North Texas, but you listen to this station. I would say that you probably think that your life is pretty important.
You're worth a membership.
Well, you know what? I agree. Chris agrees. Everyone at this place agrees, because we've chosen to go into a field where we actually only serve you, the listener of this radio station. We've chosen to dedicate our careers to, creating content just for you, just so that you have something interesting to listen to, something that's thought-provoking, something that you can even participate in by calling in and writing in every day. We think you're really important, and we think it's really a great opportunity for you to thank the station for making this kind of programming possible. And, you know, if it wasn't Chris, if it wasn't me, it'd be someone else doing this job, because public radio must and will endure. And there are people who take responsibility for it by contributing at kera.org or on the phone at 888-694-6931. The question is, will you be one of those people that take responsibility for this station? Will you be one of those people that ensures that this public radio station will endure?
Here's the reality, and we're well aware of this. Because of the way technology is changing, you could listen to stations from pretty much anywhere in the world these days. They're
all in pledge now, though.
Probably.
At this point, they are.
But, you know, they're available online. They're available, on a lot of mobile devices, all of which is a great thing. But you've chosen KERA. We know that there are a significant number of you out there who've chosen KERA, even though you don't live within our broadcast range. Welcome. We're so happy to have you here. But, you know, whatever public radio station you have chosen as your station and that serves you and your needs is the one that we ask you to support. And yours is KERA. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also make a contribution online at KERA.org. You know, I always feel like, you know, Jeff and I are not so special, but we are really lucky to be able to work on this program because it's about our guests. And I would certainly hope that after having heard today's interview, you want to know more about the work of Barbara Smith Conrad. If you watch tonight's documentary, you will absolutely fall in love with her if you haven't already. She's just really an amazing, amazing American hero and a Texas hero, which is something that it's wonderful to be able to share with you, maybe a story that you hadn't heard before.
Yeah, and the show does air tomorrow, actually.
Tomorrow forgive
evening,
me, tomorrow.
At 10 p.m. And
there's probably something good on tonight at 10,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I'm sure there is on KERA 13. You're going to want to tune in for sure. You know, Chris, you were talking about our far-flung listenership, and
yeah,
we have there are a couple of shining stars out there, people we hear from. We hear from Bill, who lives in Chiang Mai, Thailand. He listens almost every single day. He's even suggested, and I'm pretty sure he contributes, he's even suggested some guests that we happen to be having on that very day. So Bill's in sync with us. Our newest far-flung, though, listener is Paul, who runs the Peace Corps program in Kazakhstan. And he actually contributed during the drive and let us know he is a Peace Corps employee, folks. I don't think they even get paid until they get done with their 2 years of service. And if he can contribute because he listens to the podcast, certainly you here in North Texas who listen every day and who rely on this station can do something for the station and for this program that brings you guests like Richard Fisher in the first hour today, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank here in Dallas, and Barbara Smith Conrad, our guest this hour.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go online to KERA.org. Our overall goal for this drive is $700,000. We have come a very long way thanks to you. We have about $207,729 left to go. Not about. We have exactly that much left to go. You can make a contribution now, and we appreciate it. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
That is a cut from the documentary film When I Rise, featuring mezzo-soprano Barbara Smith Conrad. You can see When I Rise tomorrow night at 10 p.m. on KERA Channel 13 television. Is it exciting for you to hear your own voice?
Sometimes it is.
I mean, I hear that, and I just think that the ability to be able to make that sound must be, I mean, you must never get tired of it.
Yes, that's true. You either get to the point where you never get tired of it or you wish you had done it slightly differently.
Oh, yeah. So you always critique your own performance.
Absolutely.
So let's go back to 1985. UT calls you up and they want to extend to you the Distinguished Alumnus Award, which is a very big deal. But was there part of you that thought, oh, sure, now I'm famous and I'm world-renowned and now you want to congratulate me?
It didn't quite happen quite like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe I thought at some point. I don't know. But one thing I did know, I know that my mother was getting older. My father had passed away. I found it important at this juncture to really acknowledge things that would bring pride and joy and to my family.
Mm-hmm.
And it was tricky because in the process I turned down some pretty lucrative jobs, something I will never be sorry about, by the way.
Hmm.
I did that because I felt if there was going to be any recognition, certainly for the people who stood by me and for my family, this was the moment to do it. It wasn't going to happen again like that.
So you went there ready to forgive, or having already forgiven?
Something I've worked on.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, more or less. I mean, how long can you carry that? You know, it's from 1959 to 1985. It's time to let go.
And then it was in the 2000s, I guess, that the state legislature, was this just a couple of years ago that the state legislature?
That's 3 years ago, the state legislature, right? 2 years ago.
Okay, and this was really interesting because this was a resolution in your honor by the state legislature filed by the person who now holds Joe Chapman's seat.
I know, and what a different kettle of fish that is.
Hmm.
Delightful man, just delightful.
I mean, looking at the video of you receiving this commendation, and there's not a dry eye in the house.
No, it was very sweet. It was a very sweet moment. First of all, I had no idea all those people were poised to make this happen.
Hmm.
And so I walked into the Capitol. I have not been in that building. And there they all were. It was a moment I'm not going to forget, that's for sure.
And there's a wonderful scene in the film where after this, you sing in the rotunda. And I wonder if you can talk about what the acoustics are like in there with a voice like yours.
They're great, by the way. They're just great acoustics. I can't say that was the best singing I've ever done, but the acoustics took care of it. And the people who were there to celebrate it made no difference whether I was perfectly on the mark or not. It was in a moment I'll never forget.
You know, I watched this film the other night with my kids sitting around, and what's fascinating to me is that they have a hard time even understanding that Texas so recently was like this. Is it today unrecognizable from the Texas you grew up in, or do you still see signs that we have not completed our journey toward racial equality?
Oh, I think that's something we're going to probably wrestle with for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so complicated. It isn't just a racial issue. It's, you know, the ethic, I don't know how to put this, because there are people who prefer to live in that space, you know, where they want to be segregated. There are people who simply prefer not to cohabitate in any way. Some of that, I think, is just fear. Some of that is ignorance. Some of that's a bunch of things. And how it all comes together, I don't have an answer for that. People have to be taught to not like something or not participate in in things that that would be forward moving for people. It's a tough one. People like their comfort zones.
You still do a lot of teaching, and I wonder if you can talk about the benefits to a working artist of also participating in teaching.
I don't think there's anything much more satisfying than that, is to come to that point where you become what I call a gatekeeper, you know, where you pass on something very special that you've been able to enjoy in your life, to develop those skills, to be able to pass them on to the next generation. That's the best part of the whole thing, in my opinion.
Is it difficult knowing that there are some lessons, not even life lessons, but lessons of the work itself, that your students will only be able to learn by making their own mistakes, that no matter how hard you try, they won't learn until they do them themselves?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have students who I've worked with, and we've gone but so far, and then they realize there are things they need to learn themselves. That's just part of the whole. I think that's the way that goes, because you can be in the middle of a rehearsal in Vienna, and suddenly, boom, something occurs to you. Mm-hmm. So it's a process that goes on.
We have an email here from John, who writes from Tyler, Texas. My years at UT were from 1960 to 1964. There were many exciting things that I got to be a part of, including the integration of university housing and the businesses surrounding UT. Ms. Smith-Conrad exemplifies the adage, success is the best revenge. And John closes, hats off to a great and gracious lady.
Oh, that is so lovely. Thank you. Because you never get tired of hearing those things, because you always wish you could have done more, you know. So thank you for that.
Do students that you teach now, when you go and you do some master classes at UT, they know your story?
More and more they do. Mm-hmm. And the Briscoe Center for American History has really made a huge difference in that. More people know about this now than ever before. I know more about it. It's true.
It is interesting in the film when you're presented, I guess you're at the Briscoe Center, and you get this sort of sheaf of letters that were sent both against you and also in support of you, mm-hmm, during the time all this was going on, and you had never seen those before.
No. I didn't want to. They've been stoked away, mm-hmm, for a long time. But I had no interest.
Well, it really is an amazing depiction of your story. It's been such an honor to have you on the program today, Barbara, and best of luck with all the projects you have coming up.
Thank you. It was a delight for me. Thank you so much, both of you.
Thank you.
Many blessings.
You too. Mezzo-soprano Barbara Smith-Conrad has performed leading roles with opera companies in the U.S., Canada, Europe, and Latin America. She spent 8 years with the Metropolitan Opera. You can see her story in the documentary film When I Rise. It will air tomorrow night at 10 on KERA Channel 13 television as part of the Independent Lens series. Jeff Whittington is back. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. What a fantastic conversation. What a great guest. Oh, my gosh.
There are times that I just really love our guests. And Barbara was on the phone, as you can probably tell.
Yeah.
I wish she were in the studio, because I just would love to shake her hand.
Well, we asked if she was coming in. Of course, we always try to get the absolute best scenario with guests for you, for our listeners, so that you get the highest quality interview we can possibly deliver. We had a really good phone line, though, so the finger crossing worked out just great today.
Sometimes it is as much finger crossing as anything.
Right.
But, you know, your financial contributions to the station allow us to do things like have people on the phone. Now, we don't have quite the budget to – we've never once, I don't believe, flown a guest in here or put anybody up. We don't have the budget for that. But we are able to get some of the best – really, I think world-class people on this show, and world-class is a term that came up the other day that was very controversial, but we have people who are known around the world for what they do. We try very hard, really, to sort of curate the guest list on this show so that you're only listening to people who are at the top of their fields or who have a real reason to be talking to you about the work that they do and the things that they believe. Your contributions make it possible for us to do that. And we're fortunate to be in a large market at a respected station. We were able to grow to become a respected station in large part due to the support of listeners like Nicole Eastburn in Plano, Ahmed Zamaran in Frisco, Allison Cruz in Saginaw, and Imagine Media in Plano. All of them have been online at KERA.org or have called 1-888-694-6931 and made contributions.
We also heard from Wilbur Rashid in Terrell. Thank you so much, Wilbur. Thank you to Katie Reese in Dallas. Really appreciate it, Katie. How about you? Call us, 888-694-6931. Or go online to KERA.org. Just $206,000 and change left to raise in this membership campaign. $206,844 left to go. If you're a friend of KERA and your friend's membership is up for renewal and you're one of three or four that call right now, 888-694-6931, we'll get below that $200,000 level left to raise. And then it's just really just a matter of hours, because so many of you wait until we're almost at the end, and we are almost at the end at this point. We started a couple of weeks ago with a $700,000 membership goal, and now we just have $206,000, $844 left to raise. So please do your part. Don't wait any longer. Go to KERA.org or call 888-694-6931.
If you are able to make a contribution this afternoon at or above the $275 level, you might choose this amazing thank you package we have of sets of Ken Burns DVDs. We have the complete Civil War series, the complete National Park series, and the complete baseball series, including, was it 10th Inning, the one that came out just last year? All of those, that's a total of 22 DVDs available at or above the $275 contribution level. We know you're not calling because you want the stuff. Well, maybe in part because you want the stuff. You're calling to support the station. But look, if it's an incentive for you, we would be happy to extend that offer to you in order to secure your participation and your financial support of KERA.
888-694-6931. You can also get the stuff online at KERA.org. We give you the stuff every day. When you turn on 90.1, you get the stuff that you need to know about. You hear the news and information and the stuff that kind of drives the world. And you hear it in a way that you don't hear on other news and information stations. There are plenty of stations that might do an interview with Barbara Smith Conrad. But, you know, it's not going to be a 35, 36-minute long interview. It's going to be a 3 or maybe 6, maybe 10 minute long interview with her about her life and career. And then it's on to the next thing. We step back a little bit, take a little more time, get to know a guest, allow you to get to know a guest or topic a little bit more in depth than you're going to hear on the commercial media out there. And not that they don't do a fantastic job, but they've got different pressures on them. And honestly, they have different audiences to please. They have big advertisers that they've got to please, because they've got to deliver the right kind of ears to those commercials. We have to deliver the right kind of content to you. And that's who we are beholden to, only to you. And that's why we have no problem coming on the air during a membership campaign period just 3 times a year and asking you to contribute support.
The one thing we know about the people who listen to this station are that you're really interested in lifelong learning. And these days, that almost sounds like a cliche, but it's true for some people. Some people, you know, sort of finish school and they're like, great, I don't have to learn another thing. And people who listen to public radio, and specifically to KERA, are not in that group. You can't wait to learn new things. Just because of your curiosity, you follow things and you sort of enhance and enrich the person that you are. And I would imagine that for most of you, you don't think twice about paying money for books and magazines and newspapers and theater events and the ballet and the symphony. Paying for KERA is sort of in that category. You are paying for information that not only enhances your knowledge, but really enhances what you understand about the world. We're really proud to be able to offer this service to you, but we are not able to offer it to you for free.
Yeah, it does cost money to bring you these information-filled hours on KERA, but you decide what it costs for you when you call 888-694-6931 or when you contribute online at kera.org. It's your source for NPR News, 90.1 KERA, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, online at kera.org. And, of course, news headlines coming up at the top of the hour. Then you're going to hear Tell Me More. You're going to hear The World. You're going to hear All Things Considered. And it's here every single day. It's your contribution that ensures that it's here every single day, every time you turn on your radio.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. The easiest way probably to make a contribution these days is to go online to kera.org. We accept credit and debit cards. You can set up a sustaining membership, which is that monthly draw from your account into ours. Or if you want, you can even arrange an invoice and you can send us a good old-fashioned paper check. We do appreciate hearing from you now at kera.org. Thanks.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.